Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hello, and welcome back to the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. Today is a deep dives episode. I'm your co-host, Nick Agar-Johnson, and with me as always is my co-host, Paige Otto. Paige, how are you doing this fine afternoon?
I'm doing great, Nick. It's 80 degrees here in Michigan, sunny. Playoffs is here too. I mean, it's a really good time to just be alive and be grateful for the little things that are going on, for sure.
For some reason, we always start this podcast by talking about the weather and how it makes no sense in either of our locations. And yeah. The fact that it's 25 degrees warmer where you are continues to make no sense.
No.
But also, the more I talk about the weather, the more I feel like I'm 75 years old.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just such like an easy like ease into, you know, our episodes. I think it's like our standard intro, you know, like
our thing. Start with the weather, small talk. Well, hey, could be worse. There's plenty of other small talk topics that are more dangerous. So let's avoid all of those entirely and get into our two. Yeah, just slide right on past that and get into our two players for the day who, oddly enough, have quite a bit in common, despite the fact that they're approaching the draft from almost diametrically opposite directions. But let's start with the first one and go with your player for the week, Paige, right after this. So, Paige, the player that you picked for this week has been in a lot of behind-the-scenes conversations in terms of the direction that his career appears to be going is maybe different than what some people anticipated, but certainly hard not to be impressed after an incredible redshirt freshman year from the guy you picked for this week, Allen Graves. So, Paige, why did you decide to go with Allen Graves for today's episode?
Yeah, I mean, Allen Graves is, you know, one of the top sleepers in this class, right? And the Santa Clara guys, obviously Brandon Podziemski, J-Dub, right? Like the proof is in the pudding there, right? When it comes to the recent products that Santa Clara has produced in terms of longevity in the NBA, right? And hitting, right? So with Allen Graves, Nick and I were just talking off air before we recorded it. There's so much to like about him. You know, he's your typical two-way connective glue guy piece. He's 6'9", 225 pounds, shooting 41% from three. And he's his defensive qualities as well. I mean, he has a 5% steal and block rate, right? And he's a lot of the guys that we've talked about in deep dives are like, okay, he has flashes of shooting capability. You know, he'll look for his shot, you know, here and there. Allen Graves, his most used play type is pick and pop, right? But the problem with that too is all of his threes are 100% assisted. He's not the guy that's going to, you know, break down his defender in isolation off the perimeter, right? He doesn't have the ball handling and ball skills yet for that. His game is more like monotonous, slow. He's going to break you down step by step with his footwork, his high basketball IQ, right? He's a very, very smart player, which, as you know, the audience is listening, like, I love those type of players that, you know, just are good basketball players, right? They know their role, they know their skill set, and they really know how to produce. And get extra possessions for their teams. And that's what Allen Graves does. He's averaging 11.8 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, just under 2 assists per game on 51, 41, 75 shooting splits. And like, he's a very, very low mistake player as well. I mean, he was only averaging 0.7 turnovers per game. He's the type of guy that, you know, he's not your typical, he only started 4 games as well too. Like, he was coming off the bench, and this is a guy that is, you know, a top 25 first round pick on some boards, right? He could definitely get in there. On our latest mock draft, I believe he was like 38 or something. I don't have it right in front of me, but I mean,
yeah, that sounds right to me.
He has a big range to him, right? Just because of all the offensive enticing qualities. I mean, you're not going to find a lot of guys that have his archetype of, you know, 6'9", 225, can shoot the ball, but also are finishing at the rim as well as he does too. And he's a monster help defender, right? Like, he's not your typical center defender to me, right? He's more of like a 3-4. But he did play like some small ball 5, like here and there, but he's like your typical, like, you want him in the gaps, you want him on the weak side, you want him as the second chain of command at the rim. Cause he's not the most athletic, right? Like, if he's against like a Jalen Duren, a Mitchell Robinson, a Giannis, right? Like, he is going to get beat just because he's not that athletic. But in terms of help defense, like, he's going to be the guy that is getting deflections, extra possessions for your team. And he's always going to make most of the time, 90% of the time, the right play, and going to be in the right spot because he has such a smart basketball IQ. So he's very interesting in terms of, you know, where, what fit, right? But every team needs an Allen Graves when it comes down to it. Like, I could see him as, you know, in the Miami Heat would be a great fit for him. I think he's like an Eric Spoelstra type of player. I also can think of, you know, OKC kind of taking a look at him too and kind of developing him into kind of like this hybrid type of play, a two-way player that he obviously already is.
Yeah, so there are a couple of things that you mentioned that I definitely want to circle back to, but I think the headline for me with Allen Graves is a couple of things that you mentioned. In first of all, the basketball IQ, but second of all, sort of the follow-on from that of incredibly low mistake player on the offensive end. And I specify on the offensive end because he's an absolute foul magnet on the defensive end. And part of that is, you know, the defensive playmaking that you mentioned. But for someone playing 22 minutes a game to have more than 3 fouls a game, is that sort of stands out to me in terms of the defensive side. But again, the high IQ that you mentioned, that really comes through in his decision making on the offensive end. You know, he's someone who isn't like this crazy high volume shooter. Like, he averaged 2.5 threes per game, but there's a big gulf in my mind from 2.5 threes a game to, like, you know, some theoretical shooters that we've talked about on this here podcast in the past. Like, you know, the one that stands out to me just because he recently declared that he's going back to school for another year in Alex Condon, who was one of, he might have actually been the first episode of Deep Dives, but, you know, very early on, but the idea being, okay, he shot 32% from 3 on 1.5 attempts per game. How real is that? And then this year he shot 16%, right? With Allen Graves, again, it's not, you know, it's funny because the article that I wrote this morning for No Ceilings was about Ryan Conwell, who averages 10 3-point attempts per game, right? So that's, you know, a bit of a difference on that front. But with Graves, again, it's not like he is a reluctant shooter by any means, but he just seems to make the right decision every time. Whether it's, okay, this is a, you know, this is an opening for me to attack the basket. Great. You know, again, going back to what you mentioned, he's shooting 56% on his 2-pointers. That's nothing to sneeze at. And, you know, on top of the 41% from 3-point range, I just keep going back to how involved he was in the Santa Clara offense when he got on the floor. And yet he's not even in their top 5 in terms of turnovers per game. He just doesn't make mistakes on the offensive end. And I am specifying on the offensive end because of his foul rate on the defensive end. But it's not, you know, again, more than 3 fouls per game for his minute load is not great, but it's not debilitating, especially when it comes with the fact that he's averaging nearly 2 steals a game, right? It's not purely stupid fouls. There's a lot of good aggression mixed in there with, you know, the maybe more questionably aggressive choices. But offensively, it's hard to find a mistake that he's made. And, you know, maybe part of that is he's insulated a little bit by coming off the bench, but just time and time again, making the right read, making the right play, knowing how to attack in terms of his own offense versus when to move off the ball. Just really, really, really low mistake player on the offensive end in a way that, especially given the defensive playmaking he brings, it's very easy to imagine a coach falling in love with the guy who plays hard defense and doesn't make mistakes at all on the other end.
Yeah, like you mentioned, he has 2.56 steals to a turnover, right? Like, he is not, like, he's taking risks, but he's taking good risks that he knows he can at least get to, or, you know, at least deflect or get extra possessions. And he's just a very smart, high basketball IQ guy, right? And in terms of, you know, his shooting too, his shot diet, you know, is pretty, not all over the place, but like for his guy of like his stature, 6'9", 225 pounds, his two-way archetype, you know, it's good enough, right? He has 16 transition threes. He's shooting 44% there, 42.4% off catch and shoots, which are guarded, which ranks in the excellent category in synergy. And Nick, he has such a soft touch and feel off his floaters and hooks that makes me very bullish on him in that way, just because he's not like the fastest guy. Like, I'm just like, when I look at his game, it's very like monotonous, slow pace, like breaking you down, especially on his drives. But like the way he gets to his floater and hook off, like, he has such an insane touch that makes me feel a lot better that, you know, his threes are like all assisted in a way, just because I'm confident like he's at least showing us like he does have like the shot, right? And he's just below 70% at the rim as well, and he has 24 dunks on the season too. But as I mentioned, like on his runners, he's shooting 50%, hooks are at 42%, and, you know, he's really trying to attack mismatches, and he has a lot of counters to his game as well. Like, he's not gonna overwhelm you athletically or physically really, but he's going to break you down step by step and get his shot off, whether it's a turnaround jumper or, you know, drop step into a hook shot or a floater. Like, he's gonna find his way to use his body, because he does that super well, and find angles to get like the best shot at the rim up. And he does that super well. And I do like him in transition as well. I think, you know, just because he's not like the most athletic guy, and physical guy, like the guy that, you know, we're going to talk about next, but, you know, he does his part in transition. He does get really good, decent looks. And Santa Clara, you know, they play a lot of, four out, one in, right, five out motion offense. And he's looking for those shots. Like, he's looking to get his shot off. And he played, you know, even though he only started four games, he played 22 minutes per game and also had a 22% usage rate, right? I mean, he was a key pillar in the offense when he was on the floor, and he produced, right, in every single way. And if you look at, you know, his free throw numbers too, let me see here. You know, he only got the line 3.2 times per game at 75% there. But, I mean, he's, like, the effort's there. Like, he's physically trying most of the time at the rim to, you know, get the extra possessions, get the putbacks, go to the line when he can. But as you mentioned, Nick, like, he's trying a lot more to space out his game. And I think, you know, if I'm an NBA in the NBA front office, I'm like, this, like, there's something there with this guy that, like, if we put him in the right position with the right people around him, like, I think he's really going to thrive.
Yeah, you mentioned the mismatch hunting thing, and that's one of those elements where post-ups were his second most frequent play type. And normally when I see a player who has that level of post-up frequency in their game, the number one question that pops to my mind immediately is, okay, but is any NBA team going to use this guy out of the post? Because most of the time the answer to that question is no, right? But with Graves, again, given his combination of ability to, you know, be a shooting threat, you know, teams might put smaller players on him, you know, if they just expect him to sit behind the three-point line, at which point he can take advantage of those post-ups. And unlike some other players that we've talked about in recent weeks, I'm much more confident in terms of his ability to hit passes out of the double or just out of the post in general. in a way that makes me wonder if he will get to use that kind of offense at the next level. But that leads me back to something that you brought up earlier that I'm really curious about. You mentioned the possibility of him as a small ball five, and I've thought of him pretty much exclusively as a four, in the sense of less than a block a game and his foul rate combined to make me think, okay, this is probably not the guy you want to be your primary rim protector. And, it's not that he's bad in that regard, but I feel like a lot of his advantages are nullified a bit if he's the biggest guy on the floor, right? And part of that is that he allowed 60% shooting at the rim defensively, which is not fantastic. But part of that as well is I feel like a lot of what he does best, and he doesn't have anywhere near the same on-ball juice, but in a similar way, I think of someone like a Kyle Anderson, who, like, a lot of his best usage is when he can be big guy with a mismatch, right? It's not him playing center and, he might have less of a speed disadvantage than he would in other places, but, the flip side of that being he can't really protect the rim. With Graves, again, maybe there's some utility at the three that does allow him to take advantage of some smaller opposing players, but I'm curious what you think those lineups with him at the five would look like, because, again, a lot of what I've liked best about his game is when he can take advantage of the smaller guys, and obviously that's not going to be the case if he's a 6'9 center.
Yeah, sorry. I meant, like, when he was in the game and coming in for Bucky sometimes.
Oh, place. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Small ball five. Like, I don't trust him as a five defender at all.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, I'm aligned with you that, I see him more, like, solely four, but can be a three at the next level, because I think I trust him being that gap help defender, just because of, his steal rate, and he has great hands as well. He's very, he has good instincts there too. And he's just always in the right position. And, he's not the most athletic guy. Like, he's not gonna, jump out the gym with you or, do insane blocks at the rim. Right. But he's going to be in the right, spots on the floor, and he rotates well. But in terms of, like, him, like, being switched on, like, say if he was a small ball five, like, he just gets picked apart in ISO situations with true fives. Like, if they do like a singular drop step, like, they're one step away from, a bucket or a dunk or whatever. Like, he just can't, like, he tries, the effort's there. Like, he has 110% effort there, but, like, he's just not as strong enough with them. He's not as athletic. Like, if he's going to be against, like, a true five athletic big man, like, he's going to get beat, at least 80% of the time. But say if he's, the help defender, and, Jalen Duren, comes over, like, he's at least going to be able to wall up and, like, aid in defense, just because he moves his feet well, he has great hands, and, he has good instincts and good rotations.
Yeah, I think really what it comes down to for me is I definitely see him playing a part in a good defensive scheme, but he's not, like, he needs isolation is too strong, because I sort of tend to use that for guys who, like, I'm genuinely worried about defensively. And I'm not, like, worried about Graves defensively in that sort of capacity, but also it's the kind of thing where, he will need someone to be that interior presence. But if you have him switching, I mean, again, as you mentioned, he doesn't have the greatest athletic profile. He doesn't have the worst athletic profile either. And so, if it's switching 3-4, if it's, in the high post as opposed to the low post defensively, I think you could do a lot of good stuff and, help out a team's defense. But again, it's one of those things where, unlike with the offensive side, where I think there's a lot more interesting stuff that he can unlock, especially as a playmaking hub, defensively, I think we've kind of seen the best version of him that we're going to get. And, if he continues to do what he did at Santa Clara this last year, fantastic. He could be a positive defender in a defensive scheme. But I would worry about any team that sort of relies on him to be, okay, lock this guy down. You know what I mean? It's like, in a help scheme, in a switching scheme, a lot of value he can provide. In a scheme where there's any possibility that he gets picked on either by a quicker player or a stronger player, I would get concerned.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Kyle Anderson, and I can definitely see him being in that role. Like, they kind of move the same, and also like his shot doesn't worry me, but like it is pretty slow. Like, he takes kind of a while to get it off and get set and get balance, but I mean, it works. I think in, you know, recent years of the NBA and, you know, evaluating these guys in college, like, it doesn't really matter. It does to an extent matter, like, how slow the shot is, but like, if they're like producing and getting buckets and like making their defenders like actually not know, you know, how to defend these guys, like, it doesn't really matter to like how much it used to matter in this sense. Cause like, we're like growing up, like, you're used to like seeing these guys that have like the fastest release, like in the books, right? And kind of just moving all over the place. But there's different kinds of shooters out there now, like, that are, you know, the same or, you know, as effective, just because their shot looks a little funky, right? Like, Kyle Anderson has one of the funkiest shots, you know, in the world, right? But he's able to, you know, put the ball in the basket. And then another, you know, type of player that I was kind of thinking about in terms of role two, like Peyton Watson, right? Mm-hmm. Just in terms of, you know, coming off the bench, producing, like, they're kind of similar height and size. Peyton's way more athletic than Allen Graves is, but that similar role of, you know, I could see his development kind of like that in terms of, you know, if he went to the Miami Heat and kind of grew that way. And just having, you know, Nikola Jokic or like a superstar, high level, you know, big man, you know, at his side, I think he could really thrive. And that's why, you know, thinking of Peyton Watson, like, he's kind of surged upwards, right? And kind of on the right track. So I could definitely see that happening with Allen Graves.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, again, slightly different player, slightly different archetype, but I think a similar sort of goal, a similar idea of, hey, we need someone who can play either forward spot off the bench 18, 20 minutes a game, you know, maybe be a bigger forward in a lineup with size, maybe be the stretch four type in a more traditional, quote unquote, traditional lineup. Yeah, I get the vision for sure. And yeah, comparing anyone athletically to Peyton Watson is going to be unfair to whoever the other guy is.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, the idea of it makes a lot of sense of, hey, we need someone to come in off the bench, fill gaps for us. And with Graves, I mean, that's, you know, what he did at Santa Clara. So it shouldn't be that difficult of a transition.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all the pieces are there, right? And I think like a high end outcome would be like that of, you know, Peyton Watson in terms of, how quickly he developed and how, you know, it took some time, right? And it does take time, right? Like, some of these players are, you know, going to get it in year one and year two. Others are going to take, you know, 3-4 years, right? It kind of just depends where they go. But I think with Allen Graves, the foundation is there. The high basketball IQ is there. He's a very smart, low mistake player, and he produces when his name is called upon. And as a freshman too, like, I mean, he's only 19, like, there's loads of potential there. And with the right development staff, like, I could see him, you know, being a key part to a contender and, you know, a big part off the bench too, as, you know, a sixth or seventh man that, you know, can have like 8 to 10 points per game, 4 rebounds, and, you know, get to the line at least like 2 or 3 times for a team. And also with like 2 steals, like, he's that type of player that's, you know, it's a glue guy that, you know, any team wants when it comes down to it.
All right, shall we move on to player number 2?
Yeah, let's do it.
So technically both these guys play the same position. Technically they're within an inch of each other height wise and that's about where the similarities stop between Allen Graves and the guy I picked for this week in Co-Pete. And it is really interesting to sort of think about the season that Co-Pete had in total, because if you look at the very beginning of the season and let's say not the very end, because his last game was not pretty, but, you know, the Elite Eight and Sweet 16 games for Arizona, Co-Pete was, again, just like at the very beginning of the season, exactly what everybody could have hoped for. Just a bruising downhill menace who nobody really knows how to figure out how to deal with. And in between the, you know, those 2 points of the first game of the season and the second to last game of the season, it was a whole lot of up and down. And I think a lot of that is due to, in a positive way, due to the emergence of Braden Burrius and therefore not being as much pressure on Koa Pete to go out and get 30 as he did in the first game against the reigning national champion Florida Gators. It is, I don't know, I'm in a weird place with Koa Pete because he's not the player who's moved the most on my board just because he's stayed in the first round the whole time. You know, there's only 30 spots to move up and down in the first round, right? But I've moved him all over the place in my first round. And I have him in, I think last time I updated my board, I had him like 22 or something like that, which I think is lower than consensus, but not that much lower than consensus. And it comes down to something for me that I have thought about and really struggled with for a very long time in terms of prospect evaluation of if you're the kind of superlative athlete that Koa Pete is, at what point do you sort of reach the perspective of, is he still going to be good enough to dominate this way athletically at the NBA level? And I'm leaning towards yes. And I think a part of my lean towards yes is what he does as a playmaker as well makes it a lot harder to sort of wall him up in a way that other players of his archetype have been able to be walled up in the past. But I think about two players with this semi constantly. And there's the downside, which is, and he didn't even make it to the NBA level, but Cliff Alexander, who was, you know, projected top five pick, gets to Kansas, turns out, you know, being a 6'9 ridiculously athletic center in high school works a lot better than it did in college. And he didn't really have enough else beyond his athleticism to figure it out. The flip side of that is Tari Eason, who I watched his freshman year in Cincinnati, and, you know, there were some impressive flashes, but a whole lot of mess. And then he gets to LSU and he puts up those ridiculous stock numbers. And the question in my mind was, okay, how much of this is Tari Eason and how much of this is the LSU scheme? And then I saw him in summer league and literally within 5 minutes, it was like, oh, he's such a good athlete that even against NBA level competition, he's still so much better than everybody else that he could do all of those things. And, you know, despite injury concerns, Tari Eason has had quite a good NBA career so far. And so with Koa Pete, again, I think that he's still big enough and strong enough that he'll be able to bully NBA players. But so much of his game relies on that athleticism that I'm worried because, again, you know, there's only so many different ways I can say that the bar for athleticism in the NBA is just so much higher than it is anywhere else. And again, because he's the kind of passer he is, I'm less worried about it with Koa Pete than I am with other similar players. But I am still concerned. And I'm curious where you are with Koa Pete at this point in the process, Paige.
Yeah, I think coming into the year, two things to know about Koa Pete. I mean, he won 4 Arizona state championships in high school. One, you know, multiple gold medals with Team USA, right? He's 6'9", 235 pounds. He's a proven winner. And he handles the ball like a guard, right? He, like, the way he's able to just push through people, I mean, the last game in the Final Four with Michigan, like, he's just moving Mara around, right, downhill. Like, that's not a – everyone knows he can do that. Like, he's an elite outlier physical prospect. And, you know, he does have that mid-range juice to him, bully ball, but he only took – I believe, where is that? Yeah, he only took 23s on the season, right? And if you look at the high school tape too, he only took 10 catch and shoot attempts in high school. He had 25 catch and shoot attempts this year, and he shot it at, you know, a 36% clip. And all of his threes were also 100% assisted. Again, like, I struggle with, like, the higher end outcome of him would be like Aaron Gordon or like a Dylan Brooks, and kind of like their ascension to being like such a valuable key role player, right? Dylan Brooks, obviously he's had one of his best seasons ever with the Suns. I mean, he's averaging 20 points per game, shooting the most field goal attempts of his career from the 3-point line and at the 2-point line. Like, that's his high end outcome for me, kind of like that type of role. But with him, like, if you look at high school, like, one of his games against Columbus High School, and I believe the basketball showcase. Like, he was against Cam Boozer, right? And he, Cam Boozer, just because of, you know, the caliber he is, like, it was a simple flex screen and down low. And Koa Pete just got caught up, right? Like, and in high school, he really, really relied on, you know, hey, I'm more athletic than you. I'm bigger than you. You're like, I'm just more powerful. But when it comes to, you know, he's playing, you know, the guy, like, obviously Cam Boozer, and he's able to stretch the floor, but then he's such an interior presence. Like, that's where he got, obviously got, right? But in terms of the offensive side, I mean, he's relentless at the rim. In transition, he can, you know, get and go in a second. And you're not going to find, you know, a lot of freshmen like Kolpe that can handle the ball the way he does. He gets to his spots extremely well in the mid-range. And, you know, he's shooting 70% at the rim. And his shot looks good. He's fluid. He's mobile. But when he gets stuck, he really gets stuck, right? And he kind of went up and down this year, especially with, you know, going against true five big man. Like, obviously, when you have the interior presence of Mo Krivas, right? We talked about him. I don't know when it was, maybe earlier this month or last month, but like, he is another ginormous human being. You know, he's 7'2" and just a garbage can at the rim. You know, he's cleaning up everything. But having Koa Pete to play that high and low game with, like, Koa Pete really needs like that five man to play off of. And like you mentioned, his playmaking, like, when Koa Pete is in the mid range, because he, you know, has defenses collapsing around him, because they know, you know, he's not going to stretch the floor really, you know, he's going to operate slowly, you know, inside the arc and at the rim, because he has so much prowess. He's able to make, you know, those no look passes, you know, giving goes to the five man, or, you know, cutting, you know, Kerchekov, right? But he's not, like, in terms of pick and roll, like, he's not doing a lot of those possessions with Braden Burries. Like, I remember when we talked about Braden Burries, Nick, we're like, why the heck is, like, Koa Pete not, like, in a lot of these pick and roll possessions? And it's because he's such a downhill driver. And that game, like, he's trying to get into his mid-range a lot, or short roll, right, and try to be effective there. But I think in terms of how he has grown from his senior year of high school to now, and he's a proven winner, right, which I struggle with, is like, he was a part of, you know, Arizona's Final Four run. He won four state championships in high school. Like, the tools and physicality are there, and the shot creation in terms of the mid-range, but in terms of like the perimeter and stretching it out, it's just not like really there. It's not as consistent as like I would like it. So in terms of like, hey, I want to put Koa Pete as a lottery pick, like, I'm just not there yet. Like, I'm more of like 20 through like 23 range, just because I think there's still a lot left on the table for him that I think I was more, I was expecting more for him this year in terms of like answering those questions.
So we are in a similar place with him in terms of our boards, having him like as a late first guy. And there are a few of the things that you brought up that I want to circle back to. The biggest one being both the worst part and also something that, because of his passing, I'm more optimistic about than I would be otherwise, which is what you mentioned of just him getting stuck. And the fact that he can pass his way out of those plays is genuinely huge. Like, genuinely makes me so much less worried about where his game will go than it would otherwise. I mean, the flip side of some of that is what he can do outside of passing out of those plays when he gets stuck. And you mentioned that he only had 25 catch and shoot looks on the year. He took more than twice that many jumpers off the dribble as opposed to catch and shoots, and he shot 33% on those looks, right? And of those off the dribble jumpers, a grand total of one was from 3-point range, which he missed. So, you know, again, he's just operating in those areas where, you know, and this has been something that's so debated, and in my humble opinion, ridiculously so debated, of the death of the mid-range, that I literally wrote an article about this 10 years ago that's still exactly as, you know, the discussion around it is exactly the same as it was then, of mid-range jumpers have not been eliminated from the NBA by any stretch of the imagination. What has been eliminated is 9th and 10th and 11th men taking 20-footers. And the superstars are still getting those mid-range looks, but anybody who's not the primary or secondary scorer for the team, they're spacing out to 25, or they're sitting in the dunker spot, or they're sitting on the bench, right? There's no room for an eighth man who's a mid-range maestro at this point in the history of the NBA, which, again, you know, as you mentioned with Koa Pete, right, like four state championships, you know, one of the highest rated recruits heading into the year, and not someone who, like the aforementioned Cliff Alexander, you know, Koa Pete is still, like, most people are higher on him than we are, and we still have him in, you know, the high 20s of the first round, right? So it's not like he's sort of fallen off by the wayside in that regard. But again, the flip side of it is when you are the player that Koa Pete is and your second most frequent play type is a post-up and you're shooting 0.8 points per possession on those looks, which is in the 35th percentile, right? Those aren't looks that you're going to get much at the NBA level. If, again, more than twice the number of catch and shoots you have are off the dribble jumpers in the mid-range and you're hitting 33% of them, NBA teams aren't going to let you take those looks. And so that's where the struggle comes into play with me for Koa Pete is, you know, and we talk about cutting all the time, and he cut a lot with Arizona and he shot 60% on those cuts, but, you know, still, again, 1.203 points per possession, just barely below average in terms of cut efficiency. But, you know, getting 60% on any sort of shot, getting 1.2 points per possession on any shot is still a win. And the fact that he, you know, again, as we've talked about many times before, part of the reason that we love guys who are good cutters so much is that it shows the kind of awareness and IQ, ability to read the game, understand where you need to go, where you need to be. All of that is very positive, but again, the frequency of his mid-range jumpers, that's not something that he's going to get to see at the NBA level. And the degree to which he had a strength advantage over anybody he was going up against, that's going to be less magnified at the NBA level. And it comes down to the fact that I think he's a good enough athlete that he's still going to be well above average at the NBA level, but well above average without much else is not going to be good enough. I mean, yeah, 23 pointers the entire year. Okay, it's better that you hit 7 of them for a 35% mark than if you'd hit 5 of them, but, you know, it doesn't tell me very much about the long-term shooting potential. The fact that he shot 62% at the free throw line is also not encouraging in terms of the touch. The fact that he's the kind of athlete he is and still didn't even get to a block or a steal per game, right? 0.6 steals per game, 0.7 blocks per game. There's a lot of noise in his numbers that concerns me. But, you know, when you just look at the things that he does well, I mean, yeah, for him to get to the rim at the frequency that he did and finish at the rate that he did is, it's special. And it's not something that you find in every prospect or even in every draft, the kind of combination of athleticism, ball handling, and passing that he has. It's just, again, what counter does he have when he gets stuck in that mid-range area, as you mentioned, other than kick the ball out and start the play over?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to find a lot of prospects, like you mentioned, of his stature that have the type of, you know, change of direction and speed that Koa Pete does. Like in high school, like his processing ability was, you know, on full display. There was one possession against Cam Boozer in Columbus High School where, you know, he got the defensive rebound, was pushing up the court, give and go, and, you know, he stopped on the dime in the mid-range. That's a very tough shot to do well and be balanced and look comfortable doing it when you're, you know, 18 years old in high school. And those are the type of shots that Koa Pete was looking for and getting, right, when he's, you know, one of the highest recruits that, you know, Arizona, you know, got this year, right? But I mean, goes into, you know, how comfortable is he really in the mid-range? And he's very comfortable, right? But when you look at the numbers a little bit more, like I mentioned, And you mentioned 100% of his threes were assisted. If, you know, you knock that up to 100 possessions, he's only taking 1.2 three-point attempts per 100 possessions, right? And he's shooting 35% there. And then if you look at his rim attempts per 100, 12.1, and he's finishing at a 70% clip there, but 73% of his rim makes are assisted. Like, that kind of tells me, for a guy that's so physical and overwhelming force, especially downhill and getting to the rim, how are 73% of his rim makes still assisted? Like, it doesn't make that sense. But when you dive deeper, I mean, he was only almost his last play type, was in isolation, was, you know, nearly only 5% of the time. And yes, he was shooting, you know, nearly 50% there, but he should be, you know, thriving in isolation scenarios. And that should be, you know, his maybe first or second or third play type. And, you know, he has zero attempted threes in isolation. That's not surprising, right? But he shot 47% on twos in isolation, which tells me, you know, he attacks mismatches. I like his face-up game, like his ball handling, his ball control, I'm very confident in. And, you know, looking at high school too, like, I think he is going to ascend, right? But there's also scenarios where, like, it doesn't work out because, you know, free throw rate isn't the best, just in terms of, you know, he's shooting, you know, 60 or so percent there. But the shot looks good. The mechanics are there, but I mean, he's not going to be able to, you know, be as big of a force. He'll still be a force in the NBA, you know, especially driving downhill, getting to his spots and, you know, finishing at the rim, but he's not going to go in and, you know, do what the damage he's been doing in college, you know, right away in the NBA. Like, it's going to take a little bit. But I'm interested, Nick, in terms of NBA fit, what teams stick out in your mind right away for him that would take a look at Pete in the 20 or so range where we have them?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's a cheap answer for me, which is Denver, which is just anybody who, you know, has a little bit of playmaking juice, but can, you know, especially with his athleticism, he'll just have more holes in Denver to attack than he will in some other places. So, you know, again, that's a cheap one, but, you know, I think makes a lot of sense. I would be interested to see what he looks like on, say, the Celtics or some other team that has a ton of shooting threats where, you know, they're playing a sort of four out offense where Coopede is the one out. I think that opens up his playmaking. I think that opens up avenues for him to drive to the basket. But really, for me, I think a huge part of it is that for someone who, I think, you know, the sort of perception of him is, you know, almost always has the ball in his hands. You know, as you mentioned, a lot of his looks are created for him. And I think it's the kind of thing where he can both do more creation for himself and also do better with, you know, creating opportunities for others if he's got that kind of spacing around him. Now, the flip side of that is, you know, Arizona wasn't the Celtics in terms of bombing away, but, you know, it's not like they didn't have shooters with Burries and Jaden Bradley and Karchankov, right? It's not like they were a team that was incapable of spacing the floor. So, yeah, it's sort of a weird thing where I think the best situation for Pete would be somewhere where he's got a lot of floor spacing around him, but it's not like he didn't have floor spacing around him this year. And yet I feel like almost everything I've said about Pete has been nitpicking because, you know, he's got a very varied game, I think it's the best way of putting it, in the sense of, you know, his athletic advantages, his finishing around the basket, it's special. And part of the reason that I'm picking these Knits is because I'm so confused about how many chances he'll have to be the best version of Coopete at the NBA level as opposed to in college. Because when he was on with Arizona, he was on. I mean, that opening game against Florida was a masterclass. And the fact that he can do that in and of itself, you know, tells me, okay, he gets in the right spot. And like, if I had to bet on someone outside of the top 10 in the draft putting up a 30 ball next season, Koa Pete would be pretty high on that list, just because, you know, if he has a game where he gets it working, he can put people in the torture chamber. But there are so many minor holes in his game that all added together tells me if he gets the right pieces around him, he's going to be a stud. If he doesn't, things could flame out pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, I get the Nuggets kind of landing spot for him too. And, you know, you mentioned, I mean, after the first game against Florida, all of us were like, I mean, on Twitter, everyone's like, Koa Pete number one, Koa Pete number one. Like, everyone was like freaking out. And, yeah. You know, it's not like a dog on anyone, but like he looked phenomenal. I mean, when he gets hot like that, it's very hard to like make him, you know, slow down, just because, you know, he has the high processing ability. He's such an elite athletic, you know, type of player too. And he just understands the game super well. And, you know, he takes, you know, he goes into the mid range in such a speed where it's kind of like, how are we going to stop this guy? Who's going to go on him? Because he can, you know, attack a lot of mismatches in a lot of different ways. And with Arizona too, I mean, with the run they had, like you mentioned, he was around shooters and like he showed that playmaking ability. And I think, you know, the team that's kind of in the Nuggets range too, with the 20 at 25, the Lakers, right? Like it'd be interesting to see him again with Luke Kennard, Austin Reeves, Luka, right? And I think that'd be an interesting landing spot for him. And the Pistons are right there too. I think a lot of Pistons fans are more looking for, you know, Merez Johnson or, you know, type of those players. But with the draft coming up, I think this draft too, we've had a lot of surprises of players, you know, going back to school too. So like in terms of, obviously Koa Pete's a forward, but a lot of the wings have gone back to school. So like he could, you know, go a lot higher than we're expecting, or, you know, it just depends on, you know, come draft day, what happens. But I mean, there's a lot of potential with him.
Yeah. It's funny, 'cause I actually saw this discussion around a different controversial forward prospect in Nate Amen, but the discussion of, you know, if he goes back to school and next year is pretty universally acknowledged as a much weaker class than this one, at least where things stand right now, you know, again, do, you know, either Koa Pete or Nate Amen or somebody else, do they go back to school and, you know, be the next Blake Griffin, right? Be the next sophomore to go number one overall. It's not impossible. And, you know, especially if, you know, Koa spends the summer just in the gym, shooting free throws, shooting threes, gets to a point where, you know, honestly, I think it's more important for his NBA future for him to hit 70% from the free throw line than for him to be this prolific 3-point shooter. Just be better at the line, be more willing to, you know, put your head down, bowl through guys, get to the rim, all of those sorts of things. But yeah, I could absolutely see a world in which Koa Pete says, hey, a lot of guys have dropped out, I could maybe climb into the lottery in the 2026 class. Let's go for it. And there, I could also very much see the world where it's like, you know what? All these people who are going to be drafted ahead of me, I mean, you know, given where we're talking about him as late first round versus, you know, I think he was seventh in his high school class, right? Of him saying, no, I can beat all these guys. I can go back to school and make myself, you know, a top five pick pretty easily. You know, maybe 1-1 is a bit ambitious, but yeah, I mean, again, you know, all the nits that I've picked with Koa Pete, and he averaged 14-6-3, right? As a freshman, you know, there's so much to love in his game. And if he can clean up a few of the marginal stuff on the offensive end, then I could very much see a world where he's an easy top five pick next year. And then the question just becomes, you know, if there's an NBA team that falls in love with him and says, hey, we're going to make you the, where's the pick that OKC got from the Clippers is going to be what, 12, I think it is?
Yeah.
Somewhere in that like 12 to 14 range. It's like
12, yep.
Yeah, okay, 12. Well, you know, somebody else who we talked about earlier was a forward who went number 12 to the Oklahoma City Thunder, and Koa Pete and Jalen Williams are extraordinarily different players, but you know, if he ends up in Oklahoma City and just, you know, becomes their, not J-Dub, but Jalen Williams replacement, that works out pretty well. And I wouldn't, if OKC promised me a 12, I would not be going back to Arizona personally. So, you know, a lot of it will depend on that. But I think what it boils down to for me is there's just a wider range of outcomes with Koa Pete than there is for the average prospect. And the main reason for that is he has a lot of things that you can't teach, a decent number of things that you can teach that he's already really good at. And then it just becomes a matter of cleaning up some of the other stuff that doesn't work as well.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to share my screen real quick if I can and show.
Oh, we're getting fancy here.
Getting fancy. I think you have to let it in real quick. Maybe.
Yeah. This is that behind the scenes magic coming to work here.
There you go. Cool. Yeah. So I put this out yesterday, and for those that are just listening on Spotify or Apple, it was guess this, you know, 2026 NBA draft prospect. People thought, you know, Hannes Steinbach, Merez, we did have, you know, a couple correct answers. It is Koa Pete's shot chart, right? And it didn't really, this is basically what I thought it was, honestly. You know, you have the near 65% from the rim, right? You have very low attempts from three-point range and, you know, a lot more attempts inside, but a lot more red kind of than I thought in the mid-range than I potentially thought. But I mean, he's not gonna, you know, shoot a lot, you know, more outside 17 feet, right? He's more in the dunker spot, inside the free throw line, where he, you know, does a lot of his damage. But I mean, this is interesting, to say the least. And like the answers from Twitter were also interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I honestly expected there to be a bit more traffic in the mid range there than there was, but I think that does sum up the experience quite neatly of, hey, you know, the off the dribble jumpers he's taking, they're not, you know, they're not 25 footers. They're not 20 footers. They're not 15 footers. They're like 10 footers, which on the one hand, you know, that's a lot more viable of a brand for his game going forward. On the other hand, given that they're all in that sort of close mid-range area, you'd hope for a bit better than 33%. But there you go. I mean, yeah, the gigantic green and significant percentage of the volume right around the basket is not surprising in the slightest. Yeah.
I mean, almost 280 attempts at the rim. Like, that's Koa Pete.
Yep. He gets all the way downhill. Yeah. Once he gets ahead of steam going, nobody's stopping that man.
Yeah. So I just want to bring that up real quick. But
no, for sure. I mean, that's, again, that is the Koa Pete story in one graphic is, and there's a lot of, you know, iffy looking stuff outside of the basket area. But once you get all the way to the rim, it's like he's pretty undeniable around the basket.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, shall we move on to quick hits and wrap this one up?
Yeah, let's do it.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, so we are past the NCAA season at this point. We are past a number of international league seasons at this point, but the NBA is still going strong. We're in the middle of the playoffs, just, you know, opening games of the first round, having made it through the play-in. So, Paige, what are your thoughts on sort of where we're at in the playoff picture right now?
Yeah, I mean, Lakers up 2-0 against the Rockets. 76ers came back from a blowout game one loss and beat the Celtics last night. So series tied there. Not the best, you know, production from Celtics' guards, right? I don't think anyone was expecting them to win game two. But I mean, anything can happen in the playoffs. Like, I made a bracket of, you know, I think the Hawks could at least go to 7 with the Knicks. And we saw in game two, I mean, CJ McCollum, it's like the CJ McCollum experience. Like, love that guy. But I mean, he had like 3 mid-range jumpers that he made. The last one was like ridiculous, like fadeaway coming off the right side, made it. And then he had 2 turnovers right after that. And then he gets to the line with like 8 seconds left, or maybe a little less than that, misses both free throws. And then Knicks obviously are sprinting down the court. They're only down by one. And then Mikal Bridges, you know, gets a mid-range jumper off, but it was guarded super well and he missed it. But like, and you just saw like CJ like sigh with relief at the end. Like he was like, thank God. Like,
like save that, me.
I mean, that was one of the best games so far. Hawks and Knicks. And I mean, they're tied. Celtics, 76ers. Hoping the Pistons bounce back from game one against the Magic. I mean, I don't think people were expecting that either. But, I mean, the Magic dominated the Hornets to get into the playoffs. And Kay needs some help. I mean, Jalen Duren needs to step up big time, hopefully, tonight for him. And then, obviously, the Suns, Thunder. I think the Thunder are going to sweep. And I'm a Suns fan. I mean, they just look incredible. And then I already mentioned the Lakers and Rockets. But – I mean, a lot of good games going on so far. And obviously last night, Wemby, that was very scary. Hopefully he'll be better soon. But I mean, Blazers took game two, so it's tied there. And then Scoot, 30 ball. He's been very impressive as of late. So I'm happy for him up there.
The Scoot 30 ball was incredibly fun. It's been a while if I've ever talked about it on air. I'm not even sure I have, but long story short, I had quite a rough concussion history, and particularly in high school. And, you know, obviously best wishes for Victor Wembanyama in any context, just because he is the future of the NBA and so much fun to watch. I really hope that he and the Spurs are willing to take their time with this, because sometimes people get concussions and, you know, they take a couple days and they're fine. Sometimes it lasts a lot longer than you think it will. And, you know, even if 75% of Victor Wembanyama is better than all but like three or four NBA players at his age, and given the fact that concussions get much worse the more you have of them, I really hope that everybody involved in that situation is going to be extraordinarily careful with Wemby, because, you know, his body breaking down is always going to be the concern when you're of that size. And so making sure to be just as careful with his head injuries is something that I hope they all prioritize. But I do want to, you brought up the Orlando Detroit series and, you know, bit of an unexpected game one, but honestly, the biggest surprise for me is that Orlando is still around. I mean, last episode, you know, we did a prediction of, you know, who's going to win the play-in games. And that was the first Orlando game. And I was just like, I don't think I can pick them. They've had such a weird year. All of the news coming out of Orlando camp has just been nobody likes each other. Nobody gets, you know, like all of those sorts of things that screamed 1-2-3 Cancun to me in my head. So the fact that they blew out the darlings of the second half of the season in the Hornets to make it to the playoffs at all was impressive. If they'd honestly gotten swept by the Pistons, I think that still would have been a win for them given the season they've had. The fact that they won game one is remarkably impressive. And again, this is a team that I thought was dead in the water, and clearly they're not. So credit to the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shock. I mean, both of us were saying, like, yeah, I feel, like, weird picking the play in, like, just because I'm not as confident. But, I mean, goes to show you, too, like, you can't count anyone out. Doesn't matter, really, like, their path to the playoffs. Like, if you're not on your game or not prepared, like, those types of teams can, you know, bite you. And, like, that's what the Magic did. That's what, you know, the Blazers did, too, last night. Obviously, Wemby got hurt, right? But, I mean, and the Hawks, like, everyone thinks, like, oh, it's going to be an easy sweep or, you know, whatever. But, I mean, if you're looking at the Raptors and the Cavs, too, it's a 4-5 seed. But, I mean, the Cavs are absolutely dominating. And I always get a little, like, I don't know what to do with, like, James Harden in the playoffs as of recently. But it's been, like, super fun to watch him, like, him and Donovan Mitchell's chemistry. And Evan Mobley has been playing really well as well. So That series is going to be super fun. The Timberwolves, Nuggets are tied.
That one's been spicy.
Yeah.
There have been some takes that have been shared quite publicly for some of those players in that series.
Yeah.
They do not get along in a way that actually makes things interesting.
Yeah. Jaden McDaniels, they don't have any good defenders.
Nobody. And Aaron Gordon doing the madman thing. I don't think of you at all. Like, what is that guy?
We're having a lot of all-time NBA memes already in the playoffs, and it's only round one. Obviously, Scoot Henderson asked, like, I think the reporter was like, when did you realize you had it today? And he's like, when I woke up, which is classic. A funny one. So, I mean, it's been awesome, and we're only in the first round, so I can't wait for the next couple months.
All right, anything else before we wrap this one up?
No, all good.
All right, she is Paige Otto. You can find her on social media at @PaigeOtto_, and you can find her written work over on NoCeilingsNBA.com. You can find me on social media at NBA Johnson, and you can find my written work on NoCeilingsNBA.com as well. Depending on when you're listening to this, I either yesterday or a few days ago wrote an article about Ryan Conwell that's up over on NoCeilingsNBA, so please check that out. If you've been enjoying the show, please be sure to leave a rating and a review in whatever podcast player you might be using. 5 stars, always much appreciated. If you're checking us out on YouTube, be sure to like the video and subscribe to the channel. And if you have any feedback regarding the deep dive specific portion of the podcast, feel free to reach out to either of us via social media, or you can shoot me an email, nickaj.nba@gmail.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.